840 1360 975 WTAQ News Talk Sports. I must start with this because I find it wildly entertaining. So on Friday, Joe Biden said he'd like to take Donald Trump behind the gym. In other words, he was suggesting fisticuffs with a Republican nominee. The press always asks me, don't I wish I were debating him? No, I wish we were in high school and I could take him behind the gym. Biden also said what he said and did and does is the textbook definition of sexual assault, blah, blah, blah. So I made a snarky remark on Twitter that went like this. Trump could promote it in Vegas. You could bill it as two geezers at Caesars. I get this person responding on Twitter that says that shows my hatred for Donald Trump, calling him a geezer. He and Biden are geezers by the at least traditional politically incorrect definition. But you know what's really funny about that, Earl? You know what's the best part? I ripped it off. It's not original. Do you remember by chance the origin of that? Oh, look at you. And who? No, you got half of it. Jerry Cooney. George Foreman and Jerry Cooney, 1990. 40-year-old former undisputed heavyweight champion George Foreman and 33-year-old top-ranked contender Jerry Cooney agreed to terms on a January 15, 1990 fight, which critics in the media dubbed the Geezers at Caesars. And somewhere in my addled mind, I remembered that. And I used it as, it's just amazing. Just amazing. They are geezers. Well, I know I'm not far from geezerhood. I get that. Heck, by some people's measure, I'm in full geezer bloom. Geezer is one of the, it's kind of like old fart. It's the eye of the beholder, so to speak. My wife broke the news to me yesterday that I'm officially an old fart. I'm not sure what it was about yesterday. Maybe it was the weekend or the week I had last week where I'm lucky I didn't leave the house without my pants because I'm getting so scatterbrained. You stop it over there. You just stop it. Now, I thought it was clever, and I stand by it. Biden, what a goof. Anyway, then there's this. Now, I have told you that there are types of media bias that are quite subtle. So much so you can debate whether, in fact, they're bias. But some just stick out at you like a sore thumb. And, how can it stick out at you like a sore thumb and both be subtle? Subtle if you're not looking for it. Sticks out like a sore thumb if you are, like I do. Well, let me bounce this off you. I don't have time to take calls on this. If you see the headline, 3 killed in crash with Uber car, what's just the general sense that you get of that story? 3 killed in crash with Uber car. Bad cab driver, that the Uber driver did something wrong. I think the reasonable person, given that Uber's had its PR hits, that that's where their mind would go. 3 people were killed when a vehicle ran a red light and struck an Uber vehicle early Sunday in Milwaukee, according to Milwaukee police. So then here's the question. What the hell does the fact that it's an Uber car that was hit by a Lexus that drove, a 2015 Lexus R350 ran a stoplight, what possible relevance to the story at all, except maybe the last line? The people in the struck vehicle were Uber passengers, so on. Beyond that, I see nothing relevant. Car runs red light, killing three. Yes, Earl. That's... what in the heck? Again, if you mention it at all, or a car runs red light, kills three passengers in Uber car, if you just feel some compulsion to demonize Uber, which the media seems to do or want to do. It's just, I share that with my wife, and she's like, really? Quick programming note. Thursday, we are interviewing Jeff Perlman. Who's Jeff Perlman? He's the author of the new book about Brett Favre, Gunslinger. I started reading it last night. I hope to get through most of it by Thursday. It is a real page-turner. And I would say that it's defined by two characteristics. It tells you a lot of stories about Brett Favre that you don't know. And the ones you do know about, it adds a new insider perspective. He interviewed over 500 people for this book, Brett Favre not among them. Yes, our friend Will McKinley at Wisconsin Media Trackers, that Uber headline, biased by headline, biased by spin. It is, because the media, oh, what did the damn Uber do now? That's exactly what that does. Anyway, back to the Brett Favre story. The Brett Favre book. I'm really looking forward to interviewing Perlman. He did not interview Brett Favre. Brett Favre declined. Spoke to his sister, Brandy, to his mom, Bonita. Here's what I will tell you. It's not a gushy hero story, and it's not a hit job. What it is I think a rare portrayal from what I've read so far, and the review I read by Gary D'Amato in the Journal Sentinel, is a warts and all look at a guy who is very, very human. The portrayal of his father as the lovable big lug father, that takes a beating. That takes a substantial beating. He offers a little insight into how Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre got off on the wrong foot, and that they both share some blame. What I would say from what I know about it thus far is it's a to beat to death an already tired cliche. It's fair and balanced that he really tried to present the complete picture of a very complex man. He says something at the start of the book, like in the introduction. Who do you think, if you had to guess, Earl, who do you think Brett Favre's least favorite professional football coach was that he coached for? This caught me off guard. This really caught me off. Yes, that coached Favre. No, head coach. Right away, Earl's making this way more difficult than it has to be. Jerry Glanville's name didn't even come up in this. I didn't even think of that. He wasn't there long enough to probably have a feeling about Glanville other than Glanville. Mike Sherman would have been my guess. Brad Childress at Minnesota. Well, the guy that gave... remember, he's Chili? Chili was his slave boy, went and picked him up at the airport and everything. I haven't gotten into detail about why that is. But very, very interesting from what I know so far, and I am looking forward to having him on. All right, I got to get to two things here quickly. Earl, have FX1 4575 ready. 4575. Last week, I broke the story of Terry Fondo, former Green Bay East principal, who is again challenging the Green Bay School District on what he believes is going to be a push for a fifth high school. And he believes that they intentionally used what he calls phony enrollment numbers. The district says it was a misunderstanding. I detailed all of that for you. You can find it at the Bader blog at jerrybadershow.com, or you can go to the podcast where I covered it on air on Friday. You can do either or both, whatever you want to do. Thus far, it's segment one on Friday. Thus far, no one in the media has taken a whiff at this. Terry Fondo approached Fox 11 and the Green Bay Press Gazette before approaching me. Neither of them took a whiff at it. I have a pretty detailed story. It's at mediatrackers.org. It's at the Bader blog. And as I said, the podcast. Thus far, again, to my knowledge, no one in the media has taken a whiff at Fondo's allegations. We'll see. I don't want to rehash all of it, everything that he found. I did that on Friday. Again, you can find it at mediatrackers.org, at the Bader blog, at jerrybadershow.com, or the podcast, segment one from Friday. Now this. As you know, there is something of a civil war brewing. I shouldn't say something. There's a civil war brewing in the conservative movement. And it came to a head specifically in the persona of Donald Trump and Paul Ryan. Paul Ryan, on a conference call to House members, said he wasn't going to continue to defend Donald Trump, which was really nothing new. The real news there was he wasn't going to campaign with him. A lot of Republicans were upset. There is even talk about pushing an effort to delay the speaker election. In a renewed push that could put House Speaker Paul Ryan in a political jam, conservatives in the House are circulating a letter urging Republican leaders to delay the election that will determine whether Ryan keeps his gavel in the next Congress. House GOP members traditionally vote on top leadership positions the week following the election, but a block of members are arguing the vote shouldn't happen until December, after Congress deals with the spending bill to avoid a government shutdown and addresses other business. We really should delay those leadership races for further on in December or at least late November to give all the newly elected members of Congress the chance to get to know people. Members of the Freedom Caucus are reaching out to other factions inside the GOP conference in an effort to demonstrate broader support across the ideological spectrum for postponing the vote, which is slated for mid-November. And again, this is all tied to Ryan's blowback, it's believed, to not supporting Trump. So, last week, you get this. Now, I'm going to congratulate listeners to this show. I have not received one email, to my knowledge, about this, and I'm very pleased to hear that, because there's something floating out there. Paul Ryan admitted he's a liberal. Paul Ryan, he said it. He said he's a liberal. And it's making its way through the fever swamps of the alt-right on the web. That's not what Paul Ryan said. I'm going to play for you what Paul Ryan said, and then I'm going to explain it. But apparently it doesn't need a lot of explaining to this audience, because I haven't gotten a barrage of emails from listeners. See, Paul Ryan admits he's a liberal. Earl, go ahead.
Intellectually, and then take our principal conservative values. I really call myself a classical liberal more than a conservative.
A classical liberal. A classical liberal. Classical liberalism is a political ideology that values the freedom of individuals, including the freedom of religion, speech, press, assembly, and markets, as well as limited government. What does that sound like to you? Modern conservatism. You know why? Because it is. You know what? That is to which Paul Ryan was referring. It developed in 18th century Europe and drew on the economic writings of Adam Smith and the growing notion of social progress. Classic liberalism is the term used to designate the ideology advocating private property, an unhampered market economy, the rule of law, constitutional guarantees of freedom of religion and of the press, and international peace based on free trade. That is what Paul Ryan was referring to. That is what he considers himself, because he is. But right now, and then there's a blog post where they go, oh, Paul Ryan admitted he's a liberal, not a conservative. Traitor Paul Ryan. No, that's at Truth Feed News. No, that's not what Paul Ryan said. And as I said, I applaud the fact that I have received no emails thus far. So I did this as a preemptive strike. I have no emails thus far alerting me to let me know that Paul Ryan let the cat out of the bag, and that, in fact, he's a liberal. It's not what Paul Ryan said. That's not what classical liberalism is. If Paul Ryan can be criticized for anything, it would be for not realizing that a lot of people wouldn't know that. But even the posters on this blog said, hey, read a book. So if you heard that, or if you heard secondhand, that Paul Ryan admitted he's a liberal, he did not. He said he is a classical liberal. That's what that is. Earl, is it on this topic? All right. Well, he's going to have to make it really fast. It's on the Paul Ryan topic, Earl? All right. We can do it speedy quick. Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, Jerry, I just want to say, you know, I don't understand why people keep saying that Paul Ryan is basically a progressive. I have no idea what he's even done that would ever indicate such a thing. The people on the alt-right, need to get educated and need to understand the values of which they allegedly prescribe to. If you say that you're a constitutional conservative, then that is classical liberalism. These guys are idiots. That's all I got to say.
All right, Joel, thanks a lot for the call. Didn't advance a lot, maybe with just a touch more passion than I used. All right, a busy, busy day in the show today. We have U.S. Senator Ron Johnson joining us at 9:06 in the studio. And then I've got a ton of stuff to get to, so we'll talk about that. There's a story that you really need to be aware of, and it came out Friday. This goes way beyond Donald Trump. On the surface, it sounds like a Donald Trump story. It's much bigger than that. It came out late Friday. It was covered extensively, Wall Street Journal and elsewhere, Friday into Saturday. Revelations that the thought police at Facebook wanted to censor Donald Trump campaign Facebook posts. Most notably, his initial call, which he has now tempered substantially and gone back and forth on, banning the entry of Muslims into the United States. They deemed that as hate speech. And they've got this policy on what they deem hate speech. They delete those posts. It went all the way up to Zuckerberg. Mark Zuckerberg vetoed deeming that hate speech, saying in a presidential campaign, he basically acted like the FCC, where he said you have to give equal time and you can't censor political statements. That was the essence of what he did. This goes, the implications here are far-reaching beyond Trump or even just the current presidential campaign. We'll get to all of that, but first, Senator Johnson at 9:06. It's 9 o'clock.
News, talk, sports. WTAQ Green Bay. WTAQ FM Glenmore.